This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today, and I didn't think I was going to be driving home. But as it turns out, I am driving home. So we have small groups tonight. And so since we're actually meeting at a restaurant, I was going to just stay in town, preserve the time a little bit, work on my taxes a little bit, like that and like that. And then I just realized, which is a good thing I realized this, I just realized that I left my wallet at home today, apparently, because it is not in my pocket. Means I don't have anything to pay for my meal at the restaurant with, which means I was going to go to Walmart and pick up some dowel rods, but I can't pay for those either, which means I am running back home. So I'm going to go back home, get my wallet. Apparently I just didn't drop it into my pocket, at least I hope. I wouldn't have taken it out of my pocket. There'd be no reason for me to take it out of my pocket today, and I have no recollection of taking it out of my pocket. So I'm hoping that means I did not take it out of my pocket today, and I will go home, grab my wallet, come back in, go to the Walmart, pick up what I need to pick up at the Walmart, and then I will be in town for our dinner, which starts at 6:30 with our small groups, and then I will go back home. I need to go to buy the Walmart because I need some dowel rods. I need some eighth inch or 3/16 inch dowel rods, no bigger than 1/4 inch dowel rods. I have a stuffed toy that I need to put on a stick because tomorrow is, we're celebrating something on a stick day. Which has got to be one of my favorite holidays of the year because it's just so ridiculous. Something on a stick day. It's actually officially March the 28th, which means it's not until Tuesday, but this is what happens when committees come up with holidays. Oh, man. And basically, it's supposed to be things edible. Anything edible on a stick, you can celebrate with something on a stick day. So, there you go. So anyway, so that's tomorrow. It'll be fun. But I had got, last year people told me, oh, do you have a jalapeno on a stick? Because, you know, there's Jeff, whatever his name is, has the jalapeno on a stick. And so I was actually going to buy one of those puppets or buy one of those. And apparently it's not popular enough anymore. They did exist at one point, and the puppets existed at one point, but you just can't find them anymore. So I went on Amazon and I looked for a jalapeno plush toy and found a jalapeno plush toy, but it's not on a stick. So I got to go get a dowel rod, and I didn't want too big of a dowel rod. So I just got to run by Walmart, get some dowel rods, and jam the stick up the jalapeno and glue it. And then it will be fine. Anyways, so there's that. All is well. Things are pottering along. It's been an interesting week at work. We've been, investigating some stuff and knocking down some stuff that's been hovering, and we haven't actually been able to get closed. And so I've been helping out a little bit this week to try to get some of those things closed up and dealt with. And, you know, so we got that done. And the young man I've been working with, he's actually on vacation this week, so I tested some of his stuff. That all looked good. So, you know, it's just been one of those little weeks where we just moved from place to place to place, getting things done. And but all in all, it was good, and it looks like everything's going fine. So that's good. I did have a lovely win at the end of last week. I think I had probably mentioned that my screen had gotten cracked and it just kept getting worse, and eventually it got into the digitizer, and then it was like I had a ghost angry toddler that it would be fine for a while, and then it was just like the phone would go crazy. So it was like, yeah, gotta get this done. So I made an appointment to have the screen replaced at Batteries Plus or Batteries and Bulbs, whatever they're calling themselves now. A thoroughly excellent experience, I might add. I went to the one on North Kansas Expressway, and the guy did a great job. Unbeknownst to me, the replacement screen for the S20 Plus not only included the screen, but a new battery. And I'm like, well, there you go. Because now I have a new screen, I have a new battery. I mean, I basically have a new phone. The only thing that, you know, didn't get replaced was the, just a second, I have a text message. Oh, yes. I'll get back to there in a bit. So the only thing, I mean, the circuit boards obviously hasn't been replaced, the processor, that kind of stuff, but that all seems to be working fine. And I mean, the two biggest things when you're dealing with cell phones are the screen and the battery. Having both of those replaced, I think I can run on this thing for a while. And it has some features that I really like. And so, you know, I think I'm going to keep this phone for a while. It was $350. And a refurbed phone was, I think I mentioned this last week, is like $244 plus taxes, $260-ish, blah, blah, blah. So there was about a $75, $80 swing between the two. And, you know, that's worth my time. Because I don't have to re-enter all my passwords, and I don't have to, you know, make sure everything's all hooked up again. And, like, I use an authenticator to get into my computer at headquarters. Don't have to get that all set up again. It was, like, done. So, and it was beautiful. I have the phone with the black back for the S20. They had checked and said, oh yeah, we've got one of those. As it turned out, they didn't. They had one with the gray, and you know, that's fine. And so actually it looks kind of like a new phone. So we'll see. And I was thinking, oh, I'm going to drive into Walmart. And then I was thinking, no, I'm not going to drive into Walmart. So just a second here. I have an appointment tomorrow. Okay, yep. Can't talk about the appointment that I have tomorrow, but I need to respond. Sorry. Okay, so... that's for something else that we'll talk about later, because that is an interesting story. That's a very interesting story. We'll talk about that in a couple of weeks, and why am I in the wrong lane? I am in the wrong lane! So that's okay. We're going to drive through the Walmart parking lot, even though I'm not going into Walmart. So work was fine this week. Got my phone replaced. I was rushing around in Walmart on Friday because I had to be over to Batteries Plus at 11 o'clock, and I was trying to get through there, and people were wanting pictures, and we were doing pictures. I rushed over there. I dropped off my phone, and then I went back to Walmart and, like, finished up and that kind of thing. So it all worked out fine, and then I got my phone, and then I was happy. Did get the cover done last week, but I don't actually have the book done yet because the kiddos have been busy and we had some costuming things we had to redo for the kiddos. Weren't the right sizes, but we got that all taken care of. Hopefully this weekend we are going to take pictures of the kiddo and kiddos, and then we're going to get the cover done, and we're going to get the files uploaded. I'm recruiting beta readers, and I think I'm getting close on that. And so I just have a little bit more to do there, and then we'll have that under control. And I'm working on my taxes. I think I've amassed almost all the information I need for that. So we'll see. I did notice on TurboTax that I usually order the deluxe version of TurboTax, and they always kind of try to talk me into the extra version of TurboTax. And I noticed last year that there was a couple of entries of stuff that had always been there, like I'm self-employed, I pay my own health insurance premiums, that's deductible. And I noticed last year, I think it was last year, there was no place for me to put that in on the wizards. And I was like, where do I put my health insurance premiums in? And I finally just had to go to the forms and dig it up in the forms and go, okay, there it is. Because they didn't map it out, because apparently I did not buy the most expensive version. But I know those things are supposed to be in there. And so I can go find it if I need to. But I suppose if they didn't map that stuff out to the most expensive version, there would be no reason for you to buy the most expensive version. So, you know, that's just kind of the standard way things go in capitalism. So work is good. Got new phone is good. Costumes are good. Writing is good. It's interesting. Might have mentioned this last week. I'm still not exactly sure where I'm going on book 19. In fact, I know very little of where I'm going on book 19. The poem does help, because every book in this 24-book series is a different phrase out of the poem, and I usually try to tie the book into something about that phrase, and it does kind of help me set the emotional tone of the book. So the phrase this time were vexed to nightmare. The portion of the poem for the last book was, now I know that 30 centuries of stony sleep. Then this book is, were vexed to nightmare. The next book will be by a rocking cradle. So the whole phrase is, the darkness drops again, and now I know that 30 centuries of stony sleep were vexed to nightmare by a rocking cradle. So, were vexed to nightmare is this book. So, you know, it's got to have something about vexing or nightmaring or something. And so, you know, we'll kind of get that in there somewhere. So at least I have that to go on. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. And I kind of have an idea that I would like to open in the middle of some kind of shouting match. I kind of have this feeling of having one of my characters maybe being on trial for something, and having it be something ridiculous, because I think there's a lot of ridiculous stuff that's going on now in the world, and this business of, oh, we don't like you, so we're going to manufacture some sort of a charge, that's a very amusing idea to me. And I could make something of that. So I don't know, maybe there's something there. It kind of maybe feels like it's similar to an opening of book 15, where in book 15, I wanted to set it in the French Renaissance era, where the court, the royal courts and the protocols of the court were very, very important. And you had this very elderly king. Book 15 opens with my main character, one of my main characters, Hunter, in this gathering of the royal court around the bed of a king on a different planet. And he's an old geezer, and he manages to get one eyeball awake, and they get him set up in bed, and they bring him a little dish, and he eats what's in the dish, and then he holds up his spoon and declares, "I had pudding," and then everybody claps. So that's the way book 15 opens. But it's funny because all I had was "I had pudding." That was all I had. I just knew I wanted to have an old geezer king crying out, "I had pudding." And you start into it, and then all of a sudden it starts opening up. And it's like, oh, that's why they're on the planet. That's why this. Oh, that character is this. Oh, that's this. Oh, that's that. You know, it's just. So I don't know if it's going to be another one of those situations. We'll see. We'll see. Don't quite have it yet. But I probably mentioned this last week, and I actually had an instance of this I can't talk about this week. But what I can talk about is the young man who was living in our rock house. He had a potential problem show up with his car, and he was concerned, and he had called me, and, you know, he had found an oil spot underneath his car as he came out from his work, and he didn't know what that was, and he was, you know, and he's a mechanic guy, so he had looked underneath, and he thought he saw a drip, and you know, he was very concerned, and we were talking, and I said, "Look, buddy, look, man." And I gave this example of, I'm going to have to start writing book 19 here in a couple of weeks, and I really don't know what I'm doing for this book. But God has been so gracious and so kind to help me with 18 books. 18 books. Do you think God, who has helped me with 18 books, is going to stop helping me now? And he said, "Well, no, of course not." Right. And when you look back over the last couple of years, do you not see that God has helped you? Oh, yeah. Absolutely. He's been there for you. He's guided you. He's got you to the next place. Right. Yeah. Do you think he's going to stop helping you now? And he kind of paused and he said, "See, this is why I need to talk to you." Right. So then we got to church on Sunday and we were singing a new song. And basically the whole song is about Christ is my firm foundation, a rock on which I stand. And it talks about, you know, will he fail me now? He won't. He won't. He won't fail me. And it's, you know, that's true and true and true and true and true. He won't fail. And I actually had a chance this week to prove that out again. You know, so it, I can't talk about it, but basically there was a situation that I absolutely felt like was the right thing. God led me into it. It was absolutely the right thing. And then it looked like it wasn't going to be the right thing. And then, you know, it was like, no, I still think this is the right thing. And then there was a help. And then I had to wait. And I had to wait for 2 days. Just wait. And then yesterday, the waiting was over. And I got a chance to see whether or not the solution to the problem was going to be a $20 solution or a $250 solution. Which would have been fine either way because God has been kind. Turned out it was a $20 solution. It's like, yes, score. There it is. There it is. You know, he won't fail. And we've got a big thing. This is a big month. Got big stuff coming up over the next 2 weeks. I mean, fiber's going in. They're coming out to string the cable on Friday, and then we're supposed to be getting fiber on Tuesday. Big week. Next weekend's a big weekend. The week after that, I start book 19. Hopefully, I'll have book 18 all squared away, taxes done, and et cetera, et cetera. A lot of stuff going on. But he's been faithful. He's just been faithful. And he'll continue to be faithful. It's been good. And it's just marvelous. So, anyways, this week, I came across a podcast that Jordan Peterson did with a man named Stephen J. Shaw. It was very interesting. And it was interesting to hear them talk about this problem, because I have mentioned this issue in the past as part of my systems analyst investigations into gender relationships. But this specific thing, they did a podcast on unplanned childlessness. And it was very interesting. And they had a lot of interesting things to say. And certainly unplanned childlessness can't be reduced to simply one factor. And they were bringing up all kinds of different factors. And at the core, what's happening is there are few countries in the world that are operating at replacement rate at this point. And according to Stephen J. Shaw's investigation, there really is no good solution for this. That once you begin to fall below replacement rate, he hasn't seen anything that has brought it back. There's some things that Hungary did, like there's, I think it was Hungary that said, you know, if you have one child, then you don't have to pay taxes for so many years. And if you have four children, you don't have to pay taxes the rest of your life. I mean, some of these countries are recognizing this is a problem, and China has a problem, we have a problem. I think the only industrialized country that we know of that is actually at replacement rate is Israel. And the reason for that is pretty obvious, because... How's everything going with you all?
We're doing good.
Good. Have a great day. I thought that was somebody I knew. It wasn't. So yeah, I mean, Israel is the only one, but that's because those families in Israel, they know that the existence of the nation depends on them. And so they're having babies. They're having lots of babies because it's their religious duty. And where the babies are actually happening, like in the United States and in other places, very religious families, immigrant families. You know, it's not anything that, if people have grown up in the United States and they're, you know, at all making it at all well-to-do, that kind of stuff, the birth rates are just tanking. And so they went through a lot of potential reasons for that. And it was interesting to hear them go through those things and look at those things. And, you know, maybe that's contributing to some of it, maybe. But I think one of the core reasons is far more fundamental than anything they talked about. And I think if you don't recognize it as a core reason, then you get into situations like China, where China just freaked out over their population growth, didn't really pay any attention to the fact that it was already starting to tail off. They just didn't pay attention to them, thought we've got to do something. And so then they did something. and they did their one child policy, and now they've got themselves in a situation where they are well below replacement rate because they did this horrific forced abortions and sterilizations, and I think it was hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of babies. I can't remember the exact, but it's unbelievable the amount of death and destruction they caused. So they were talking about this podcast because the Stephen J. Shaw was saying that you can see the same trend showing up for Germany and Italy and Japan and South Korea. South Korea was starting just a little bit later, but Spain, Portugal, Switzerland, et cetera, et cetera. And he said, when you try to go back and talk to people about why don't you have, you get all these localized reasons. But he said to Jordan Peterson, you talk about dragons, and I like that idea. And he said, and you go around, you keep seeing the little dragons everywhere, and it's all the same trends. And so they were talking about the fact that the number of countries that have fallen to a birth rate of 1.7 or 1.6 or 1.5 where they're not replacing. It's just all over. And he said, when you look at percentages, you have about 5% of women who don't want children, who say they don't want children. But you've got about 30% who don't have them, which is a huge gap. And they were talking about the fact that people thought, well, you know, maybe we'll get through my 20s and then I'll get into my 30s and then we'll be fine and I'll have kids then. But they talked about all these dynamics. One of the fundamental things that they did talk about that is absolutely true is that there are different timelines for men and for women. So men can father children into their 60s, 70s. And women, as far as going through that process in any sort of non-threatening, non-dangerous way, the best chances, it's 30, you know, up through 35, 38. And so they were talking about the fact you can get women who get into their early 30s and then they decide, okay, I've done, you know, what I wanted to do in my career and now I'm just going to look around and settle down. And, you know, they try to find men in their 30s who want to settle down and have kids. And the women in their 30s aren't just competing with other women who are in their 30s. They're competing with women who are as young as 18 because men don't have any problem with marrying younger. And then you get into older men, and the older men don't really want to have children because they've already had their children. And so you can really get into a situation where you just end up with a lot of women that can't find what they're looking for, who feel like they should be choosy because they should have high value because they have good jobs and they are career and they're attractive and there's all these dynamics happening. But one of the things that I've always come back to with this childless rate is that it's been my presumption that what really drives women to have children, we talk about a mother's love, and there is that aspect of it. But far more than that, I think, is the way the system is actually constructed. And the way the system is constructed, what drives forward the entire enterprise of human reproduction and human birth rates and all that sort of thing is anxiety on the part of women. On the part of men, what drives it forward is lust and, you know, I want to relieve the pressure of producing way too much sperm for anything that it could possibly be used for. So on the male side, we've talked about this before, you basically just have a shotgun approach. You load them up with a lot of shells and a lot of ammo, and then you just turn them loose. And eventually some of it gets to the right place. But on the female side, women have to be much more guarded because it's a precious resource. Their eggs are a precious resource. There is a finite number of them. And they're dropping them every month. And when they actually get into puberty, they only have about, I think it's a third of what they're born with. And then they're dropping them every month as part of the whole menstrual cycle. And so, you know, and in addition to that, there is a general anxiety that a base level of anxiety that is higher in women than in men. And having children is a way to alleviate some of that anxiety. But, and especially when there aren't good societal structures around. So if you have women whose lives are endangered by the fact that there's not a good societal structure around them, they don't have any prospects for jobs, they aren't literate, they aren't, okay, well, then they're going to make babies. Because that's one way that they can ensure their future. Because when those children grow up, then those children will take care of them. It's this deep, deep, deep instinctual urge. Well, as soon as you cross into a situation where women have the educational opportunities and they're literate and, you know, they can afford to be more choosy and they afford to be, why should they run out and have a bunch of babies? Having babies is really, really hard work and it's dangerous. It can be life-threatening. And then it is demanding for years. It's demanding. So even in the most egalitarian society where people still help, this woman still has to carry this child in their body for 9 months, which is a huge demand. And so they might still be interested, but we'll do it a little later. We'll do it a little later, and then a little later turns into a little later, and then turns into unplanned childishness, childlessness. And so, I mean, it seems perfectly reasonable, and frankly, I don't know any way for us to get out of that. And I think all the projections, and if you just come at it from a just strictly evolutionary standpoint, maybe this is why, if evolution is true, and if mammals are the best pathway forward to get intelligent species, maybe the reason is we can't find any aliens out there is because when we all get to this one point, the great filter, when we get to the great filter that civilizations can't get beyond it, because all of a sudden they stop reproducing because people can actually get jobs. And then the society just folds inward and collapses. And then we have a few people left, or maybe there's some great disaster, and so then we start making babies again, but eventually we get to a place again where we're comfortable, and then the population collapses again. So there's a thought for you. It's all just very, very, very interesting. It's going to be really interesting to see what comes. I mean, there's so many moving pieces right now. It's just fabulous. But I have made it home. And I do need to check on my beloved because she got another series of shots today. Got to see how she's doing. And then I get to get turned around and run back in and buy some dowel rods at Walmart and then go over and have a nice supper with our small group. And then we'll come home and do the things that we need to do this evening. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.